Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present Iron Angels, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1. I press my back against the cold brick wall outside the bank, my heart pounding like a war drum in my chest. The midday sun beats down, but a cold sweat clings to my skin under my leather jacket. Through the glass doors, I catch a glimpse of our reflections, four figures in black riding leathers and helmets, looking like faceless specters. My finger twitches near the trigger of my shotgun as I take a deep breath, trying to steady myself. This is it, I think. No turning back now. Ready, Sam? Cass's voice crackles through my earpiece, low and tense. I glance to my right. Cass is crouched by the side entrance, pistol drawn, her long braid visible under the helmet. Even through the tinted visor, I imagine the fierce determination in her eyes. Cass has always been our rock, cool and unshakable. She gives me a slight nod. On the other side of the door, Riley flexes her gloved fingers around the grip of her revolver. I know she's itching to burst in, adrenaline junkie that she is. Steady, girl, I urge silently. Riley's the wild card, fearless, sometimes too fearless. This isn't the time for her to go rogue. Lily stands behind me, the youngest of our crew, practically vibrating with nerves. I can hear her breathing hard through the mic, poor kid. This is her first big job. I promised her we'd get through it, that I'd keep her safe. I intend to keep that promise, even if it kills me. On three, I whisper, barely moving my lips. My voice comes out steadier than I feel. One, two, three. We move as one. I shoulder open the heavy glass door and rush inside. The others are right on my heels. Everybody get on the fucking floor. I scream, the words ripping out of my throat harsher than I expected. There's a collective gasp from the dozen or so people in the lobby. A middle-aged teller yelps and drops a stack of papers. An old security guard near the entrance fumbles for his weapon, eyes wide at the sight of us. Riley is on him in a heartbeat. She slams the guard against the wall, her forearm pressing into his throat. Don't even think about it, Grandpa, she hisses through her helmet. The guard's pistol clatters to the marble floor, and Lily kicks it away, sliding it under a desk. I pump my shotgun, the metallic chachik sound echoing in the high-ceilinged lobby. Down! Everyone down now! I roar. My voice reverberates. It's a tone I barely recognize as mine, fueled by adrenaline and fear. People comply, dropping to their stomachs, hands over their heads. A woman whimpers. I swallow, forcing myself to stay in control. Cass strides toward the teller counters. She vaults over with agility that belies her 38 years, landing among the cowering employees. Where's the manager? She demands, gun pointed at a trembling young teller with tears in her eyes. Manager now. A portly man in a cheap gray suit raises a shaking hand from behind a desk partition. I am the manager, he stutters. Cass fixes him with a cold stare through her visor. Vault. Open it. We have a time lock. I can't, he begins, voice quavering. Bullshit. Cass snaps, pressing the barrel of her pistol to his forehead. Get your ass to the vault and open it, or I start decorating the walls with brain matter. The manager lets out a terrified squeak and nods frantically. Cass hauls him over the counter and frog marches him toward the back. I keep my shotgun trained on the customers and staff sprawled on the floor. My arms ache from the tension, but I can't relax for a second. Lily bags. I bark. Lily jolts and then remembers her role. She swings the duffel bag off her shoulder and tosses it over the counter to Cass. I can see Lily's hands shaking badly. Her pistol wavers as she points it at the floor near a young couple clutching each other. Her stance screams panic. Hey, Lil. I say under my breath, using the softest tone I can manage. Breathe. We've got this. She glances toward me. I give her a small nod. Her shoulders relax a fraction, and her grip steadies. Good girl. Riley has the crowd under control on the lobby side. She stalks between the customers on the floor like a wolf surveying prey. Anyone moves, I'll put a bullet in your spine, she growls. To punctuate, she smashes the butt of her revolver onto a marble tile, the sharp crack making a woman yelp. I shoot Riley a warning glare. She meets my eyes for a second and rolls hers, but eases off, moving back toward the entrance to peek outside for any sign of cops. I hear Cass in the back corridor, barking orders at the manager. Hurry the fuck up. You think I'm playing? Get that vault open. The next few seconds feel like a slow-motion nightmare. There's a sudden high-pitched beep from behind the counter. The alarm system. The manager must have hit a silent panic button. I realize it just as I hear Cass snarl. You idiot. Shit. My stomach lurches. We've got an alarm. Wrap it up now. I shout. From the corner of my eye, I see the manager scurry into the vault as Cass holds him at gunpoint. Lily's breathing quickens again, her head snapping toward the door. A chorus of sirens swells in the distance, growing louder. They'll be here in under a minute. Riley, I call. How we looking? Riley peers through the blinds. Two cruisers incoming fast, she snaps. We gotta go, Sam, like yesterday. Cass, I yell toward the back. My voice echoes sharply. Tick-tock, there's a thump and a muffled cry. Cass appears, shoving the manager back out toward the lobby. She's lugging the duffel now bulging with cash. Time's up, let's roll, she shouts. We start backing toward the door, maintaining our threatening stance. I'm last out, shotgun still aimed at the hostages. My legs feel jittery as hell like they're about to give out, but I force them steady. Stay down for 10 minutes and you'll live, I warn the prone civilians. My voice is ice, belying the firestorm of anxiety inside me. If any of you heroes try to get up before we're gone, you're dead. Got it. Most whimper or nod vigorously. A balding man in a suit lifts his head slightly. There's anger in his eyes, a dangerous glint. I zero in on him. Face on the floor now, I bark. He hesitates, jaw clenched. Don't be stupid. For a heart-stopping moment, I think he's going to be a hero. But then the sirens wail right outside, red and blue lights strobing through the front windows. He flinches and ducks back down. Smart choice. Let's move. Cass yells urgently. We burst through the front doors in formation. Cass and Lily in front with the cash, me and Riley covering with guns. The second we're outside, we break into a sprint for the bikes. Our motorcycles are lined up at the curb, engines still running. The thunder of sirens is on top of us now as two police cruisers screech to a halt across the street. Tires squeal. Doors fling open. Freeze! Police! The first officer out barely finishes shouting before Riley spins and fires in his direction. The crack of her revolver splits the air. The cop dives behind his open car door as the bullet shatters the cruiser's windshield. Glass sprays. I grit my teeth. No turning back now. I pump my shotgun and fire at the second cruiser. The buckshot peppers the hood, spiderwebbing the windshield and forcing the other cop to duck. In the chaos, Cass swings a leg over her bike. She's already revving it, one hand clenching the heavy duffel. Lily fumbles with her helmet, nearly dropping her gun as she scrambles onto her own motorcycle. Her movements are clumsy, panic slowing her down. Go, go, go! I shout, jumping onto my ride. The engine roars beneath me. I kick off the stand and twist the throttle. Riley is right behind me, firing another wild shot toward the cops to keep their heads down. In my periphery, I see one officer pop up from behind the cruiser, training a pistol on us. His face is taut with fear and determination. Weapon, he shouts, and I realize he's aiming straight at Cass. She's closest, struggling to steer with the duffel slung on her back. Everything narrows to that moment. Without thinking, I twist, raise my shotgun one-handed toward the threat, and squeeze the trigger. The blast kicks my shoulder. The officer staggers and collapses against the side of the car. For an instant, I'm not sure if I hit him or if he just took cover. Then I see crimson blooming across his uniform shirt. He slides to the ground, eyes wide in shock. I just shot a cop. Fuck! The curse rips out of me, panic and fury twisted together. There's no time to process. Gunfire erupts behind us, bullets whizzing past. The other officer is shooting now, and I hear the ping of a round off Riley's bike frame. Riley snarls, crouching low over her handlebars as she accelerates. Cass is already tearing off down the street, and Lily finally kicks her bike into motion, wobbling as she speeds away. I rev up and follow, heart in my throat. A bullet zings past my ear. I flinch, nearly swerving into Riley. We streak out of the parking lot with engines screaming, weaving around a minivan that lurches to a stop to avoid us. Tires squeal on asphalt. The wind lashes against my helmet as we fly down the road. In my mirror, I catch a glimpse of the patrol cars giving chase, lights flashing like furious demons. The cop I shot is out of sight, down and hopefully unable to follow. City streets blur past in a haze. We blast through a red light. Horns blare as we dart between cars. My heart is hammering so hard I think it might burst. Lily is up front now, her smaller bike nimble as she zips through an intersection. Cass sticks close behind her, the duffel bouncing against her side. Riley and I bring up the rear, riding flank. A siren grows louder behind us. We haven't lost them. These cops are hell-bent. Another shot rings out. A side mirror of a sedan next to me explodes. Shit, they're firing on the move. We need to shake them before we hit the open highway, or they'll radio ahead. Up ahead, I spot a narrow maintenance road branching off toward an old drainage canal, a gravel path between the canal and a warehouse fence. It's a tight squeeze, but it's our best shot. I gesture and veer left, leading the others into the turn. Our tires hit gravel, and we kick up a cloud of dust as we roar forward single file. The first police cruiser follows too fast, its wheels skid the moment they leave the pavement. I glance back to see the car fishtail violently. Hold on! I shout into the mic. With a sickening crunch of metal, the lead cruiser loses control. It slams sideways into the chain-link fence and barrels halfway through, front end hanging over the canal's concrete edge. The second cruiser screeches to a halt to avoid plowing into the wreck. Yes! Riley whoops as we speed onward. I watch in astonishment as the first cruiser teeters, then plunges hood first into the shallow canal with a crash. Water and mud spray up. The cop inside clambers out, drenched and furious but clearly out of the chase. The second cruiser is stuck behind the wreckage, its lights still flashing uselessly. My pulse is roaring in my ears. We keep going down the canal road, winding behind warehouses until the sirens fade behind us. We lost them, I pant into my headset, hardly believing it. Hell yeah, we did. Riley crows, laughter crackling through her mic. Did you see that? Boom. I don't share her humor. My hands are trembling on the grips, adrenaline still flooding my veins. A cop is down, maybe dead, and it's because of me. I push the thought aside. I can't afford to fall apart. Head to the silo, Cass calls, her voice level but urgent. That's our rendezvous point, an old abandoned grain silo on the outskirts of town. We ride in tense silence for the next 10 minutes, constantly checking our mirrors. My heartbeat slowly eases from a gallop to a heavy thud. The cityscape gives way to scrubby industrial lots and weeds cracking through asphalt. Finally, we slip onto a deserted service road behind a defunct factory, and there it is, the crumbling concrete silo, rising like a lonely tower against the sky. Riley kills the truck's lights as we roll to a stop behind the silo. Cass is off her bike first, ripping off her helmet. Her dark hair is plastered to her forehead with sweat. Lily practically falls off her bike, doubling over and gasping, her helmet rolling from her hands. I swing off my ride and yank my helmet free, sucking in the cool air. It feels like I'm breathing for the first time in 10 minutes. My red hair tumbles out, damp and tangled. Cass's eyes scan each of us. Everyone okay? She asks, her voice taut. Define okay, I mutter shakily. My legs threaten to buckle, but I force myself to stand tall. We had two cruisers on our ass, and I shot one of them. The admission comes out hoarse. Cass's jaw tightens. Did anyone see your face? We kept our helmets on, right? No plates on the bikes. Helmets stayed on. I confirm, wiping sweat from my brow with a shaky hand. We were solid on that front, but it might not matter now. A nauseating wave hits me as the adrenaline drains. I see the image of that officer in my mind again, the red stain spreading. Riley flips up her visor. One of those bastards winged me, she growls, holding up her left arm. A bullet grazed her sleeve, leaving a bloody furrow along her bicep. Just a scratch. Cass nods curtly. We'll patch it up later. Lily, you all right? Lily stands upright, wiping her mouth on her sleeve. Her face is ashen, tears streaking clean lines through the grime on her cheeks. I am okay, she lies unconvincingly, voice trembling. I thought we were dead back there. But we're not, Riley says, almost cheerful in the comedown of excitement. She hops over and slings an arm around Lily's shoulders. You did good, kid. First one is always the worst. You held it together. Lily manages a weak smile and nods, though her eyes are glassy. Cass unzips the bulging duffel and dumps part of its contents onto the dusty ground. Bundles of cash tumble out, bound in bank straps. All four of us stare for a moment. It's more money than we've ever seen in one haul. Damn, Cass breathes, a hint of pride in her voice. Ladies, we are flush. Riley gives a low whistle. How much do you think? Couple hundred grand easy, Cass says, rifling quickly to check for dye packs or trackers. A few bills are stained with telltale ink, but most look clean. She quickly tosses the ruined ones aside. Despite everything, I feel a swell of triumph looking at that cash. It's not greed, it's vindication. This money will save lives. I catch Lily's eye. Think of how many girls we can help with this, I say, forcing positivity into my tone. This makes it worth it, right? Lily bites her lip, tears spilling anew. She nods. Yeah, she whispers. Yeah, it does. Cass starts stuffing the money back into the bag. We can celebrate later. Right now we need to move. The whole city will be looking for a crew of biker bitches who hit a bank and shot an officer. We stick to the plan and get to the safe house, lie low. Riley wipes sweat from her brow with a grin. Time to trade these wheels for something with a few more seats. She tilts her head toward the derelict barn nearby, where we stashed an old pickup truck for our getaway. We planned for this. Ditch the bikes to throw off trackers and roll out in a nondescript vehicle. It still hurts to abandon our rides. Those bikes are part of us. But we can't exactly waltz down the highway with the entire police force hunting for motorcycles. Cass tosses me a black hoodie from her bike's saddlebag. Cover that jacket, Sam. Your red leathers are like a goddamn beacon. By now, every cop in the state knows to look for a red jacket on a bike. She's right. I slip off my cut and zip the hoodie over it, hiding the bright color and patches that proclaim Iron Angels. Cass and Lily do the same with neutral jackets to cover anything recognizable. Riley jogs over to the pickup and jimmies the door open. In seconds, the engine sputters to life. Hotwiring is one of her many questionable talents. All aboard, she calls softly. Cass and I haul the cash duffel and our smaller go bags into the truck bed, hiding them under a tarp. Then we pile into the cab. Riley takes the wheel, Cass rides shotgun, and I squeeze into the back seat with Lily. The old truck smells of oil and rust, but it'll get us out of here. As we roll out onto a back road, leaving our bikes hidden in the shadows of the silo, I can't help a final glance back. My chest aches seeing them abandoned there. But iron can be replaced. Flesh and blood, not so much. We drive in darkness for a while, headlights off to avoid drawing attention. The only sound is our collective breathing and the rumble of the truck's engine. My adrenaline high is crashing hard, leaving exhaustion and a creeping dread in its wake. What's our next move after we hole up? Riley asks quietly from the front, breaking the silence. First, we patch up and rest, Cass replies. Then we see how bad the heat is. That alarm and the cop. She trails off, her tone grim. I tighten my arm around Lily, who leans into me shivering. I can feel her racing heartbeat slowly settling. Mine isn't far behind. It got messy, I say softly. Messier than we wanted. He was going to shoot us, Riley mutters, a defensive edge in her voice. Fuck him. Better him than any of us. Cass glances at me over her shoulder. Her eyes meet mine, and there's a sympathetic weight there. We knew the risks, Sam. No one wanted bloodshed, but it happened. You did what you had to do. Don't go falling apart on us now, all right? I'm not sure I can even reply. I just nod and look away, blinking the burn of tears out of my eyes. Falling apart is not an option. Not while Lily's trembling against me, relying on me to keep it together. Not while Cass and Riley are counting on me to lead. I force a swallow, my throat dry as sandpaper. I won't, I manage to say. Let's just get to the safe house. Cass turns back around, satisfied for now. Outside, distant sirens still echo through the night, but they seem to be heading toward the city, not out here in the sticks. The sky ahead is moonless and black. I can't see what we're hurtling toward, only what we're leaving behind. The blood, the fear, that cop's shattered face as he went down. Lily sniffles, her voice small. Do you think, did we kill him? I don't answer immediately. I know who she means. The cop. In all our planning, we never talked about what if we actually killed one of them. We all said it wouldn't come to that. It shouldn't have come to that. I don't know, I whisper eventually. It's the truth, however bitter. Maybe. She nods against my shoulder, and I feel a tear soak through my shirt. He was going to shoot Cass, shoot us, she murmurs, as if trying to convince herself. Riley overhears and grips the steering wheel tighter. Damn right. They wouldn't hesitate to put us in the ground. They already see us as scum. No one replies. We all know she's not entirely wrong. The truck rumbles on through the darkness. In the distance, lightning flickers, revealing bruised clouds on the horizon. A storm is brewing, and not just in the sky. We got away tonight by the skin of our teeth. We have a bag full of cash for our righteous cause. But as I hold Lily close and stare into the night, I can't shake the feeling that our war has only just begun. The road ahead is about to get even darker, and God knows if we'll all survive it. Chapter 2. It's past midnight by the time we reach the safe house. The sky has opened up, rain pouring in sheets, as we pull the truck into a ramshackle barn on the edge of an old farm property. Lightning flashes across the fields, illuminating an abandoned farmhouse with peeling white paint and boarded up windows. The place looks dead, but that's exactly what we need, somewhere everyone else forgets about. We kill the engine and sit in silence for a moment, listening to the rain drum on the barn's tin roof. My muscles protest as I climb out of the truck, every part of me exhausted and aching. The adrenaline has long since ebbed, leaving behind a raw emptiness in my chest. Cass pries open the barn's side door, and we hustle through the downpour toward the house. Riley helps Lily, who's stumbling half asleep, one arm draped over Riley's shoulder. I clutch the duffel tight under my jacket, guarding our hard-won treasure from the weather. Inside, the farmhouse air is musty and stale. Cobwebs hang in the corners, and the floorboards creak under our weight. Cass's friend promised this place would be stocked with a few basics and, most importantly, off the grid. No electricity, but there are candles and battery lanterns. Better than nothing. I drop the duffel onto a dusty kitchen table and quickly move through the rooms, checking each in turn, old habits. Living room empty. Two bedrooms empty. No signs of squatters or surprises. The windows are shuttered or boarded, which suits me fine. All clear, I report softly as I return to the main room. A lantern casts a weak yellow glow around us. Thunder rumbles in the distance. Riley is already shrugging out of her wet jacket with a wince. Now that we're safe-ish, the tough facade is cracking just a little. Cass rummages through a supply box on the counter and pulls out a first aid kit. "Let me see that arm," Cass says. Riley sinks onto a rickety wooden chair and lets Cass inspect the bullet graze. In the lantern light, I can see Riley's left bicep clearly for the first time, an angry crease along the flesh, oozing blood but not too deep. "Just a flesh wound," Riley mutters, though her jaw tightens as Cass cleans it with antiseptic. "Could have been worse," Cass replies. "Hold still." She irrigates it and wraps a clean bandage snugly around Riley's arm. Riley hisses at the sting, but doesn't complain beyond that. Meanwhile, I steer Lily to sit on an overturned milk crate. The poor kid is drenched, her blonde hair plasters to her face in limp strands. She's shivering violently, whether from cold or shock, probably both. I grab an old quilt from a pile of supplies and wrap it around her shoulders. She looks up at me, eyes swollen and lost. "Teach, thank you," she whispers. "Anytime, Lil," I say gently. I rub her back through the blanket, trying to warm her. She's so young. In the flickering light, she looks even younger than her 20 years, like a scared teenager. Her lips tremble. "Sam, I'm as sorry I froze. I almost got us. Shoo." I crouch down to her level, putting a finger to her lips. "You did fine. We all made it out. That's what matters." She sniffles and nods uncertainly. Cass finishes with Riley and comes to Lily with a clean rag. "You hurt anywhere, hon?" she asks, motherly concern creeping into her voice. Lily shakes her head. "And no, just tired." Cass gently pats Lily's damp hair with the rag, drying her face like a child. It's oddly tender seeing Cass, our badass drill sergeant of a leader, dote on Lily. I catch a glint in Cass's eyes, some well of emotion she's holding back. For all her tough love, Cass cares about us deeply. Riley flexes her bandaged arm and stands up. "We need to know what's happening out there," she says brusquely. "Always straight to business, that one." "Agreed." Cass nods and heads to the living room where an old battery-powered radio sits atop a dusty mantle. She fiddles with the dial, trying to find a station through the static. I take the brief lull to remove my own jacket and check myself over. No bullet holes in me somehow. Just bruises blooming on my knees and elbows from our rough ride. There's a smear of dried blood on my cheek. I'm not even sure whose it is. Probably the guard I slammed. I wipe it off with the back of my hand and inhale slowly, trying to ground myself. My ears tune into the radio static as Cass dials around. Through the fuzz, a reporter's voice suddenly breaks through. "Robbery turned deadly at a downtown branch of First Federal Bank. Police have confirmed one officer was shot and killed." My heart stutters. "Killed? The cop I shot, he's dead." Cass glances at me, her expression grim. Riley's face hardens, and Lily brings a hand to her mouth. The radio continues. Witnesses describe four suspects believed to be women who escaped on motorcycles. The suspects are considered armed and extremely dangerous. A statewide manhunt is underway. FBI and ATF have been called in to assist, as authorities suspect this may be part of a larger criminal network. "Larger network, my ass," Riley growls. She begins pacing, adrenaline clearly surging again. We all listen intently as the report goes on. The news anchor's voice is grave. "Officials have not released identities, but sources indicate the group may call itself the Iron Angels. Law enforcement is treating them as domestic terrorists. An APB is in effect across state lines. Officers have been instructed to shoot on sight if the suspects do not surrender immediately." Lily gasps softly. They're calling us T-terrorists? I feel a coldness creeping into my limbs that has nothing to do with the rain. Terrorists. Shoot on sight. The words ring in my skull. Riley stops pacing and lets out a harsh, bitter laugh. Terrorists. Because we knocked over a damn bank? They're the ones who shot at us first. It's not just the bank, Cass says quietly, clicking off the radio. She sits down on the arm of a moth-eaten sofa, rubbing her temples. We've hit three banks in as many months. And now a cop is dead. You better believe they're gonna throw the book at us, and then some. Calling us terrorists just gives them free rein to use any force they want. I sink onto a chair, the weight of her words pressing on me. Domestic terrorists. That label, it changes everything. If they truly see us that way, we have zero chance if we're caught. No negotiating, no mercy. Lily begins to sob softly into the quilt. I never wanted to hurt anyone. I'm not a terrorist. I'm not. Her voice breaks. I move to her side and hug her close. She buries her face against my shoulder. We know, Lil. We know. I whisper, fighting my own urge to break down. I have to stay strong for her. Riley slams her fist against the wall, causing a puff of plaster dust. Those bastards. This is bullshit. We rob banks, yeah, but we didn't blow anything up or shoot random people like actual terrorists do. We're just trying to. She cuts herself off, biting her lip. Just trying to what? Cass asks sharply, raising an eyebrow. Riley throws her hands up. You know, help people. Stick it to the assholes in power. Whatever. She avoids our eyes, and for a moment her tough mask slips. This cause it meant something. But if they're painting us as monsters, what are we supposed to do now? We can't exactly show up in court and explain ourselves. Her tone is sarcastic, but beneath it I hear real fear. Cass stands, rolling her shoulders. What we do is stick to the plan. We lay low, then we get out of Dodge. Maybe head west, disappear for a while. Things will cool down eventually. Cool down? I echo incredulously. Cass, they put the FBI on us. This isn't going to just blow over next week. They won't stop until we're either behind bars or dead. The frankness of my own words sends a shiver through me. Cass meets my eyes. So we make sure it's not dead. And not behind bars either, if we can help it. She says it with calm conviction, but I see a tremor in her hand as she brushes a stray hair back. Lily lifts her head from my shoulder, eyes puffy. And maybe we should just, I don't know, give back the money? Would that make them stop? She sounds desperate, grasping at anything. Riley barks a laugh. You think they care about the money? Girl, a cop is dead. You could hand them $1 million, and they'd still throw us in a hole forever. Or, since we're terrorists, maybe just put a bullet in our heads the second we step out with our hands up. Her words are harsh but not wrong. Lily's face crumples and fresh tears fall. God, what have we done? She chokes out. I didn't want this. I just wanted to help people like you helped me. She's spiraling. I grip her shoulders gently. Lily, look at me. She does, her blue eyes shiny with tears. We did what we thought was right. Remember why you're here. Remember Vanessa? Lily hiccups a sob and nods. Vanessa, her friend who'd gotten pregnant and couldn't get a legal abortion in this godforsaken state after the bans. She tried to go it alone and ended up in the ER with severe complications. Lily had called our anonymous helpline in a panic. We helped pay for Vanessa's hospital bills and a safe procedure. Vanessa made it barely. Many others haven't. If it weren't for the money from our last job, Vanessa wouldn't have gotten a real doctor in time, I remind softly. She could have died. You saved your friend because of what we do. Because of what you did, Lil. Lily wipes her nose on her sleeve. I know. It's just, no one was supposed to get hurt. We promised. We said no one would get hurt. Her voice cracks on the last word, turning into a wail. Cass steps forward then, surprising me by kneeling in front of Lily and taking her hands. Sweetie, listen, Sometimes things don't go according to plan. We never wanted blood on our hands, but it's done now. We can't change it. Her tone is firm but gentle. All we can do is make sure it wasn't all for nothing. We have to get that money to where it's needed, and we have to stay alive and free to keep helping. Otherwise, all those risks were taken for no reason. You hear me? Lily sniffles and nods uncertainly. Cass squeezes her hands. You think I like this? God, I'd give anything not to have innocent blood spilled. But I truly believe in why we started this crusade. If I didn't, I'd walk out that door right now and let them take me. But I won't. We owe it to every girl out there who needs help to see this through. Cass's voice shakes at the end, and a silence falls, broken only by the steady patter of rain on the roof. I'm struck by her words. Cass isn't one to wear her heart on her sleeve, but tonight the armor has cracked a bit. Riley clears her throat, clearly uncomfortable with the heavy emotion. Yeah, well, all the good intentions in the world won't mean shit if we're dead or locked up. So, how about we talk about our next move that doesn't end in suicide by cop? I nod, swallowing the lump in my throat. Riley's right. We need a plan and fast. We can't stay here long. They'll be searching everywhere within 100 miles by morning, if not already. Cass stands up, regaining her stoic demeanor. I say we rest a few hours, then head out before dawn. Stick to back roads. We can try to get to the state line by tomorrow, maybe cross into somewhere quieter. And then what? Keep running forever? Riley asks, arching an eyebrow. We ditch this state, they'll just chase us in the next. Unless we leave the country entirely, I don't see an off-ramp here. She has a point. My mind races. Leave the country. That idea has lurked in the back of my mind, but it feels so drastic. And expensive. But we do have money now. If we have to, we will, I say slowly. The words taste bitter. Mexico, Canada, whatever it takes. But let's not jump there yet. Maybe we can find a safe place to lay low, let our network help hide us. Cass's face hardens. Our network? You mean the handful of clinic contacts and activists who quietly take our donations? Sam, they're not equipped to harbor fugitives, especially not ones labeled as terrorists. We'd just be bringing the storm down on them too. She's right. Dragging allies into this would put them in danger of being charged as accomplices. My shoulders slump. So it's on us alone. We knew that, Riley says. She grabs a half-empty bottle of whiskey from the supply box, as if expecting it might be needed. She was right. She takes a swig and offers it to me. I normally avoid drinking when my head needs to be clear, but tonight, hell, one sip can't hurt. I take a small swallow. It burns down my throat, warming me. Riley passes the bottle to Cass, who waves it off, then to Lily, who shakes her head fervently. Riley shrugs and takes another hearty gulp for herself. Cass begins pacing now, brow furrowed. We have to assume they might trace the truck or this location eventually. By tomorrow night at the latest, we should be somewhere else, maybe even split up for a bit. No. I cut in, perhaps more sharply than intended. We are not splitting up. The thought of us separated, each on our own against the world, fills me with dread. We've made it this far by sticking together. The moment we split, we're vulnerable. Cass holds up her hands. All right. It was just an idea. We stay together then, but we need to be smart. Avoid main roads, maybe switch vehicles again if possible. Riley nods. I can hotwire us a new ride easy enough, preferably something stolen from far from here, so it's not tied to this area. I glance at Lily. She's gone quiet again, staring blankly at the floor. Her face looks drained. I'm worried about her mental state. Everything tonight has been hardest on her. She notices me watching and musters a weak half-smile. I give her a reassuring pat. Cass checks her watch, an old waterproof Timex. It's 2:30 a.m. If we leave by 5, that gives us maybe 2 hours to rest, 1 hour to get our shit together. Let's rotate a watch. I'll take first shift. I'll stay up too, I say. I'm too wound up to even think of sleeping. And I want a moment alone with Cass to talk if I can. Riley chimes in, raising the whiskey bottle in a mock toast. I'll second that, I ain't closing my eyes until I absolutely have to. I can barely sit still anyway. True enough, her foot is tapping restlessly. Cass sighs. Fine. Lily, you try to sleep, at least. Take the bed in the first bedroom. There's a cot in the second one I'll use in a bit. Lily looks like she might protest, but she's clearly exhausted. Okay, she whispers. I help her up and walk her to the small bedroom just off the hall. Inside, it's dusty and smells of mildew, but there's a bed with a bare mattress and an old pillow. I find a spare blanket and lay it out for her. She sits on the bed, clutching the quilt around her shoulders. Her eyes brim again as she looks up at me. Sam, if I fall asleep, promise you'll wake me if something happens. Don't just leave me here. Her voice is so small, it breaks my heart a little. I kneel down and take her hand. I'm not leaving you, Lil. None of us will. I promise. We're in this together till the end, okay? She nods, wiping her eyes. I give her a quick, gentle hug, then step out, pulling the door half-closed to give her some privacy, while still being able to hear if she calls out. Back in the living room, Cass is by the window, peeking through a gap in the boards at the rain-lashed night. Riley is lying on the sofa, one arm draped over her eyes, the whiskey bottle resting on her stomach. Whether she's actually trying to sleep or just lost in thought, I'm not sure. I quietly move to Cass's side. Anything out there? She shakes her head. Just rain and darkness. Good cover for us, at least for now. I lean against the wall next to her. For a moment, neither of us speaks. It's a strangely peaceful interlude amid the chaos, listening to the rain. How are you holding up? Cass asks softly, eyes still trained outside. I let out a breath I didn't realize I was holding. Been better. You? She gives a little shrug. Alive. Not in cuffs. I'll take it. We lapse into silence again. There's so much I want to say, questions I want to ask her. Like how far is she willing to go with this now that everything's gone to hell? But I'm not sure how. Cass surprises me by speaking first, her voice barely above a whisper. I keep thinking about my boy. I turn to look at her. She rarely mentions her kid. Tyler? Is he with your mom? I recall she left her 10-year-old son with her mother when we started this mission. The official story was that Cass got a long-haul trucking job to cover being away so often. She nods. Yeah, safe for now. But if they identify us? She grimaces. If they come to my house, start asking questions. I just, she sighs, and I see tears in her eyes that she quickly blinks away. He deserves better than a mom who's a wanted terrorist. The last word drips with bitterness. Without thinking, I place my hand on her shoulder. Cass tenses at first, then relaxes. You're doing what you're doing because you want a better world for him, I say gently. For all our kids, born or unborn. She gives a hollow little laugh. I tell myself that. I do. But try explaining that to him when I'm not there. If I never make it back. Her voice catches, and she doesn't finish the thought. I squeeze her shoulder. Don't go there, Cass. We'll make it. All of us. We have to. I infuse as much confidence as I can, though I'm not sure I believe it fully myself. Cass turns away from the window at last, looking me square in the eye. In the dim light, her face looks older, lined with worry and sorrow. Sam, if it comes down to it, if I'm caught and you three get away, you keep going, you hear me? You use that money for the cause. You take care of Lily. You make sure my boy, stop. I cut her off fiercely, my throat tightening. Don't talk like that. We're all getting out of this. She opens her mouth to argue, but I glare at her. After a beat, she just nods and looks down. All right. All of us, she echoes quietly. I let go of her shoulder as she steps back. Riley suddenly sits up on the couch, drawing our attention. Hate to break up the Hallmark moment, but someone else should get a bit of shut-eye too. Sam, if you're not sleeping, maybe I will after all. She stands, stretching. She must have overheard at least some of our low conversation, but tactfully didn't comment on it directly. Go ahead, Riles, I say. Cass and I will watch a while. Riley nods and trudges off to the second bedroom, bottle still in hand. Wake me if the feds come busting down the door, or if breakfast's ready, she jokes darkly, trying to lighten the mood. Then she's gone down the hall. Cass takes a deep breath. She's not wrong. You should try to sleep some too, Sam. You've been driving yourself all day and night. I rub my eyes, which are burning with fatigue. Maybe in a bit. My mind's still racing too much. Cass puts a hand on my arm. Thank you, by the way. I tilt my head. For what? For earlier. Saving my ass. That cop, if you hadn't. She trails off, but she doesn't need to continue. I nod slowly. I'd do it again, I say, voice rough. I hate that I had to. I know. She squeezes my arm, then releases it. Get some rest soon, okay? I'll keep first watch on the front. You take second in a couple hours. I want to protest, to stay up, but my body chooses that moment to remind me of its limits with a wave of exhaustion, so heavy I sway on my feet. All right, I concede. 2 hours. Promise to wake me. Cass nods. Promise. I grab another blanket from the supplies and curl up in the corner of the couch Riley vacated. I leave my boots on and my gun holstered at my hip, just in case. Cass settles into a chair by the front door, pistol resting on her knee, eyes trained on the shadows. As I lie there, staring at the flicker of candlelight playing across the water-stained ceiling, I try to will my brain to shut down for a bit. But images from the day keep intruding. Flashes of the guard's terrified face, the gunshots, the cop bleeding out on concrete. And older images, too. My best friend Marisol sobbing after her assault. The funeral when she didn't survive the infection from that butcher who claimed he could end her pregnancy. The rage I felt then, the utter helplessness, all of that propelled me here, to this moment. I squeeze my eyes shut, pushing those memories back. They're why I fight, but right now I need rest. I focus on the steady sound of rain, counting each distant rumble of thunder. After what feels like ages, fatigue finally drags me under. My last hazy thought is a prayer to whatever powers may be listening. Please, just let us see another day. Chapter 3. A sharp crack of thunder jolts me awake. For a confused second, I forget where I am. Then I see the broken farmhouse door, smell the damp mildew, and it all crashes back. We're fugitives, and dawn is breaking on another day of hell. Cass's hand is on my shoulder, shaking me. Her face hovers above mine in the gray pre-dawn light filtering through the slats. Sam, we gotta move. Now! I sit up, instantly alert. In the dimness I can make out Riley already on her feet, peering out a side window with her pistol drawn. Lily stands behind her, blanket clutched around her like a cape, eyes wide and anxious. What is it? I whisper, swinging my legs off the couch and reaching for my shotgun. Cass's voice is low and urgent. Vehicles on the road. Might just be a farmer, but I'm not betting our lives on it. We need to get out of here. My heart leaps into my throat. I shove the quilt aside and shrug on my damp jacket. It's still raining, a steady drizzle now. Maybe it's nothing, but the tension in Cass's face says otherwise. Riley creeps back from the window. Saw headlights coming up the hill about a mile out. Could be nothing, but who else would be out here at 5 a.m.? Her tone makes it clear she expects the worst. Lily starts breathing faster. Oh God, oh God. She mumbles. I quickly shoulder the duffel bag of money, now a good bit lighter after we ditched some ruined bills and used a little cash for fuel. I thrust Lily's helmet, which she'd used as a makeshift bowl for water overnight, into her hands. Put this on, I hiss. It's not much protection, but any little bit helps and it hides her face. Cass cracks open the revolver's cylinder to check her loads, then snaps it shut. Out the back to the woods. The barn is too obvious. We go on foot and circle back for the truck if we can lose them. We nod all around. Without another word, we slip out the farmhouse's back door into the wet morning. The rain has eased to a mist, clinging to our clothes as we jog crouched low across an overgrown field toward a line of trees. My boots squelch in the mud, and Lily nearly trips over a root, but Riley catches her arm and half-drags her along. We reach the tree line just as I hear the distant crunch of tires on gravel. I risk a glance back. Two sets of headlights now, cresting the rise by the farmhouse. They're moving slow, deliberate. Not a farmer on a joyride, this looks like a search. We duck behind a thicket of brambles. From here we can see the barn and house, maybe 200 yards away. Two SUVs with police markings roll into the yard, blue lights off but windshield strobes flickering. My stomach twists. Sheriff's deputies or state police, maybe. Either way, trouble. The first SUV pulls up near the barn, and three figures spill out, rifles in hand. The second parks by the house, and another two officers emerge. They fan out in practiced formation. They found the truck, Cass murmurs beside me. My eyes follow her gaze. The barn doors hang ajar from our exit, and the corner of the green pickup is visible. One of the deputies at the barn shouts and gestures, pointing at the truck. His buddies immediately raise their weapons and start advancing toward the house. Shit, Riley breathes. They know we're here or we're here. One deputy kicks in the front door, and they swarm inside. I can't see them for a moment. The rain muffles any noise. Lily clings to my arm, trembling. I squeeze her hand. In my other hand, I clutch my shotgun so hard my fingers ache. Cass inches close to me, shouting over the din, "We have to break for it. If they surround us, we're done." I nod, mind racing. Covering fire, then head for that gully at 10 o'clock, I suggest, recalling a shallow ravine visible on the drive-in. Got it, Cass agrees. Riley, Sam, lay it on thick. I'll get Lily across, then you follow. Riley's already reloading, jaw set in determination. I take a deep breath and rack a shell into my shotgun. Lily's breathing quickens next to me. Go! Cass shouts. Riley and I pop up from behind the oak and unleash everything we've got toward the muzzle flashes at the treeline. My shotgun booms once, twice, each blast kicking hard against my shoulder. I hear a man yell in surprise or pain. Riley empties her revolver, the flashes lighting up her gritted teeth in staccato bursts. In those precious few seconds, Cass grabs Lily by the arm and half drags, half carries her, sprinting low toward the gully. I see figures by the barn scrambling for better cover as our barrage shreds the shrubs around them. One deputy returns fire, and a bullet whistles past my cheek, so close I feel the hot breath of it. I duck and start running after Cass and Lily. Riley is right on my heels, slapping spent casings out of her revolver as she runs. "That'll make him think twice," she pants, a manic edge to her voice. We plunge down into the gully, sliding on wet leaves. Cass and Lily are just ahead, splashing across a small stream at the bottom. A voice behind us shouts, "They're running west. Cut them off down by the creek." Flashlights now pierce the gloom behind, beams dancing through the trees. The deputies are in pursuit, and more distant sirens signal reinforcements on the way. We scramble up the far side of the ravine. My thighs burn as I push through pain and exhaustion. Once up top, the forest opens into a sloping field leading toward another patch of woods beyond. Without stopping, we bolt across the open expanse. Dawn is creeping in, the sky a dull iron gray, giving just enough light that we're likely visible to anyone behind. Crack! A shot rings out. Beside me, Riley stumbles with a sharp cry and goes down to one knee. "Riley!" I shout, skidding to a halt. She pushes herself up, teeth gritted. "I'm okay, keep moving," she growls, but I see blood seeping through her pant leg. They've hit her, maybe in the thigh or calf. Cass hesitates ahead, torn between running and helping. I grab Riley under the arm, practically lifting her. She hobbles forward with my support, cursing under her breath with each step. We dive into the next copse of woods as two more shots crack into the dirt behind us. Too damn close. Cass leads us in a desperate zigzag through the trees. My lungs are on fire, and Lily is sobbing softly as she runs, but we can't afford to stop. Finally, mercifully, the sounds of pursuit grow more distant. Perhaps our wild path confused them, or that they paused, wary of another. Ambush! More sirens wail somewhere off to our left. Maybe the road is that way, where backups are arriving. We slow down, each of us gasping for breath. Riley is limping badly, leaning on me. Cass scans around, then points toward a thicket that crowns a small hill. "There, let's hide and check Riley." We collapse behind a dense cluster of holly and pine. Riley immediately sinks to the ground with a groan. I check her leg. There's a bullet hole ripped through her black jeans on the outer thigh, flesh a messy red beneath. "Shit, shit," I mutter. "Lily, hand me the kit from the bag." Thank God we shoved the first aid kit in the duffel. Lily, shaking like a leaf, fumbles it out. Under the stress, she seems to need tasks, so I tell her, "Hold this light." I hand her a small flashlight. She focuses it on Riley's leg with trembling hands. Blood trickles out, but it looks like the bullet went through the meat and out, no bone shattered, I think. It's messy but could be worse. I pour some water over the wound and press a wad of gauze on both sides. Riley hisses in pain, fist thumping the ground, but she manages not to scream. "Clean through," I inform Cass, who kneels opposite me. "She'll live, but we have to stop this bleeding and move." Cass nods. Together we wrap Riley's leg tight with bandages from the kit. She'll have a hard time running, but at least she won't bleed out. Riley bites down on a stick the whole time to avoid crying out. When we're done, her face is pale, but she flashes me a weak grin around the stick. "Told you it's just a scratch," she jokes raggedly. I shake my head, relief mixing with exasperation. "Smartass." We allow ourselves maybe 30 seconds to regroup. My entire body is trembling from the exertion and adrenaline. Lily looks on the verge of passing out, but she's here, physically unhurt. Cass peeks through the bushes down the slope. No sign of immediate chase, but voices echo faintly. "They're still out there, sweeping the woods." "We need wheels," Cass says in a hushed tone. "On foot, with Riley hurt, we won't last another mile. There's a highway about a click that way," she points west. "Maybe we can find a car to steal or flag someone down, though that's its own risk. Flagging someone down is a non-starter. We can't trust any stranger not to turn us in, not with our faces likely on the news by now." "We'll have to boost one," I agree. Riley grunts, trying to stand. I help her up. She can put a little weight on it, but not much. She leans heavily on me. Cass shoulders the duffel from me to lighten my load. "Let's keep moving, slow and quiet." We might slip past their perimeter if we go wide enough. We move as a unit through the woods, Cass leading, me half-carrying Riley, Lily close by my other side. Every rustle makes my heart jump, but aside from distant shouts and the hum of a helicopter somewhere way off, probably joining the search, we see no one for the next 15 minutes. At last, we reach a country road that intersects with a Tulane highway beyond. The morning light is growing along with my anxiety. We'll be easier to spot in full day. Luck is with us when we find an old shed by the road, and beside it, an aging station wagon, no owner in sight. Perhaps the property owner left it there, or maybe it's abandoned. Either way, it's an opportunity. Riley, despite her leg, insists on handling the hot wire. "I got this," she pants, sliding into the driver's seat while Cass keeps watch and I support Lily, who is swaying on her feet. Within a minute, the engine coughs and then purrs to life. The keys weren't even in it. Riley must have forced the ignition. The woman is a wizard with anything on wheels. Cass quickly helps Riley clamber to passenger side. Riley can't work the pedals well with her injury. I help Lily into the back, and then jump in behind the wheel. Driving isn't usually my role, but I'm fine at it. I don't even bother checking if there's fuel, no choice. I throw the wagon into gear and pull out onto the gravel road, heading for the highway. As we roll, Lily closes her eyes, lips moving silently, praying maybe. I catch a glimpse of myself in the rearview mirror. I'm splattered with mud, a streak of blood on my jaw that might be Riley's. My eyes look feral, on edge. Cass is in the back with Lily now, reloading guns and keeping an eye behind us. So far, no one on our tail yet. We reach the highway and I turn south, away from where I suspect the cops are thicker. The wagon rattles at 60 miles per hour, but it holds together. No one speaks for a while. The only sound is the thump of the tires on the wet road and Riley's occasional sharp breaths of pain. I drive with white-knuckled focus, expecting sirens around every bend. After about 20 miles, we cross into the next county, maybe out of the immediate dragnet. I'm not naive enough to think we're safe, but we bought some breathing room. There's a collective exhale in the car. Lily even manages to sip some water, and Riley leans back, eyes closed, conserving strength. Cass maps out our route with a tattered road atlas found in the glove box, likely years out of date, but better than nothing. If we cut west on Route 19, we can avoid the interstates for a while and maybe head toward the mountains or even another state line, Cass advises. I nod. Sounds like a plan. We soon find the turn and I guide the station wagon onto a smaller, winding road flanked by dense pine forests. The morning is dreary and foggy, more rain on the way. It works in our favor, concealing us. After another half hour, the adrenaline wears off enough that fatigue and hunger set in. We haven't eaten since yesterday afternoon, but stopping is risky. Finally, when the sky opens up into a downpour again, I decide to pull off onto a muddy logging trail. I park under a thick cluster of trees for some cover. The rain will mask us from aerial searches for the moment, and I doubt anyone's out here. "Let's take five," I announce. My voice is rough and weary. No one argues. Cass helps Riley elevate her injured leg on the seat. I hand out the last protein bars we had stuffed in the duffel. Lily nibbles hers without appetite. It's like chewing cardboard, but it's fuel. As we sit in the patter of rain on the roof, a heavy silence envelopes us. We made it out, but only barely. Each of us is lost in our own thoughts of how close that was. I find myself replaying that sprint through the woods. The moment Riley went down, I thought that was it, that we'd lose her. The moment I fired blindly and possibly hit one of those deputies. Did I kill him? I don't know. I only know I aim to keep their heads down. But for all my talk of not wanting to kill, I've fired an awful lot of bullets at living people now. The weight of that is crushing me inside, but I shove it aside. Later. I'll deal with it later if later ever comes. Riley breaks the silence, her voice hoarse. We can't keep doing this. She looks at us with uncharacteristic vulnerability. Outrunning them like this. Next time one of us won't be so lucky. Her gaze flicks to Lily, and then down to her own blood-soaked bandages. Cass exhales slowly. You're right. We need a long-term out. Not just running in circles. I swallow hard. We talked about maybe leaving the country. I say it quietly, as if the woods have ears. What if we head for Canada? Or Mexico? We have cash. It's not impossible. Cass rubs her temples. Mexico might be easier. We're closer to the south. But Canada is more stable once we're in. Either way, crossing a border with this heat on us would be insanely risky. Every law enforcement agency has our descriptions now, maybe even the feds at border checkpoints. Riley snorts. We could try to slip across somewhere remote. People do it. But with Lily and me half crippled. She trails off, frustration evident. Lily finally speaks, voice tiny. What about my cousin in Baton Rouge? She might hide us for a bit, or know someone with a boat. We could maybe go by boat. It's the first time Lily has volunteered an idea, and it's shaky at best. Cass gives her a sad smile. It's a kind thought, Lil, but I don't want to involve your family. If they get caught hiding us, they'd go to prison too. We can't do that to them. Lily nods, wiping a tear. I just feel so helpless. I'm sorry, she whispers. I reach back and squeeze her knee. Don't apologize. We're all just throwing ideas out. We'll figure something. My reassurance is cut short by the squawk of static from the dashboard. For a split second, I think it's a radio, but it's an actual police scanner mounted under the dash of this old wagon. Possibly left there by the previous owner, maybe a volunteer firefighter or something. And it's active. All units be advised, suspects last seen heading west from Millard County. Vehicle possibly a green Ford wagon, 1980s model, stolen off Route 7. Armed and dangerous. The female dispatcher's voice crackles. Our blood runs cold. They know what we're driving. Of course. Some poor soul must have reported the station wagon missing already, or a deputy found the abandoned shed with an owner to interview. I slam the scanner off, heart thudding again. So much for being under the radar. Cass meets my eyes in the mirror. Time to ditch this ride. Riley closes her eyes and mutters an exhausted curse. But there's no debate. We can't stay in this car now. There's a town a few miles further west, according to the map, Cass says quickly. We could swap vehicles there, but it's a risk. Lot of cops on the lookout. Maybe we avoid town and find another farm or house out here with a car, I suggest. We consider that. Rural theft again, but our faces might not be known out here yet, only the vehicle description. Ultimately, Cass nods. Let's get moving. We'll drive a bit closer to town and look for an opportunity en route. If nothing, we'll try the outskirts. I throw the wagon back into gear. My body protests the motion, every muscle screaming for rest, but rest will have to wait. We pull back onto the road and continue west, pushing the old station wagon hard. Rain continues to drench the world, the wipers slapping furiously. Within 20 minutes, we spot a small ranch property by the road, a faded blue pickup truck parked out front. No one seems to be around. We exchange looks. Could be our chance. Cass volunteers immediately. I'll go. One person is quieter. Sam, get ready to drive as soon as I'm back. Before I can object, she slips out into the rain and jogs toward the ranch house and truck, keeping low behind fence posts. In my gut, I feel uneasy at letting her go alone, but someone has to stay with Riley and Lily. Time crawls as we watch Cass disappear around the side of the house. Minutes tick by. Each breath I take feels like it'll be overheard by the whole world. Finally, I see the blue pickup's lights flare to life. Thank God. Cass pulls the truck up next to our wagon. I notice she's soaking wet, but looks unharmed. She leans out and gestures urgently. Move your asses, let's go. I quickly help Riley limp from one vehicle to the other. Then Lily scrambles in after. Cass has already tossed our duffel in the bed of the pickup. I slide into the driver's seat of the truck, and Cass hops in the passenger side. Without waiting another second, I floor it, leaving the old wagon by the roadside with its engine still idling. Maybe it'll throw the cops off for a few extra minutes. Back south or keep west? I ask Cass over the rumble of the truck. It's old but powerful. She chews her lip. West. We might cross into the next state by midday if we hurry. I press down on the gas. The pickup roars down the rain-slick road, carrying us toward uncertain horizons. In the mirror, Lily holds Riley as our wounded warrior finally allows herself to rest, eyes closed and head on Lily's shoulder. I swallow the lump in my throat and focus on the road ahead. We're alive, together, and for the moment one step ahead. But as the miles tick by, one thought keeps gnawing at me. Riley was right. We can't keep doing this forever. Something has to give, either a stroke of luck or a sacrifice of some kind. I glance at Cass. She's staring out her window, jaw tight, fingers drumming anxiously on her knee. I wonder what she's thinking. Perhaps the same thing I am. This road only ends in two ways, freedom or failure. And we've come too far to accept failure now. As thunder rolls once more in the distance, I grip the wheel and drive on, praying for that miracle that might grant us another day. Chapter 4. We drive for hours, pushing the stolen blue pickup as far as it will go. By late afternoon, the rain finally lets up, leaving the world drenched and steaming under an overcast sky. The highway turns into back roads and the back roads into dirt paths as Cass navigates using memory and the Atlas. Riley dozes fitfully, head in Lily's lap, as Lily gently strokes her hair. I catch Lily quietly humming some lullaby-like tune, probably to soothe herself as much as Riley. My own eyes ache with exhaustion, but I force myself to stay alert. Cass has been directing me with terse, monosyllabic instructions for the last leg. Left here. Straight for 2 miles. Right at the split. She finally breaks the silence with something more substantial. There's a place up ahead. An old freight yard by the border. Used to be a checkpoint before they built the new highway. My old trucking buddy Frank sometimes parks his rig there waiting for loads. He might help us cross. Her voice sounds oddly flat. I glance at her. You sure he's there? We can't risk strolling into a populated area, Cass. She wets her lips. Frank's reliable. If he's not there, at least the spot is secluded. It's as good a place as any to regroup and plan the border crossing. Something in my gut twists. Cass won't meet my eyes, staring straight ahead as I drive. Her hand taps nervously on the windowsill. I chalk it up to the obvious stress, we're all fried and scared. But I also think about how she volunteered Frank so quickly. The plan does make sense, in theory. We do need either a hiding spot, or help to cross into Mexico. And Cass has more trucking contacts than any of us. Still, why didn't she mention Frank earlier, when we were brainstorming? Maybe because earlier she wasn't ready to gamble on involving him. Or maybe desperation is making her bring him up now. I push my doubts down. This is Cass, my rock. She's had our backs through everything. She wouldn't steer us wrong. We eventually turn down a rutted lane that supposedly leads to the old freight yard. Dusk is approaching, and the sky is a bruised purple. Perfect cover if we move soon. The area seems abandoned, just scrubland and a few derelict structures. Eventually we pass a rusted sign. Freight inspection closed. My nerves jangle. This place would be perfect for an ambush. Then again, any place would feel like that in my current state. Slow up, Cass says quietly. We're here. I ease off the gas as we roll into the yard. It's a wide gravel lot with faded painted lines for trucks long since unused. There's a small office building to one side, windows dark and shattered. A chain-link fence runs along the far edge, and beyond that, I see another road and some concrete barriers marking the borderline perhaps a quarter mile out. Just beyond, in the distance, stand the hazy silhouettes of hills that lie in Mexico. So close. To my surprise, there is indeed a big rig parked near the office. A dull red semi-truck cab hitched to an empty flatbed trailer. No one in the cab that I can see. It's plausible someone might leave it here, but also possible it's a trap. I scan the area carefully as we pull in. No other vehicles. Deathly quiet except the crunch of our tires on gravel. Riley stirs in back, wincing as she sits up. Where are we? She mumbles bleary. Almost at the border, I say. Cass has a friend who might help. Riley peers out the window at the deserted yard and snorts. Great hospitality. I park the pickup behind a stack of old shipping containers, out of immediate sight from the road, or the semi. Then I kill the engine. My heart is thudding. Something about this silence. Cass hops out first. Wait here a sec, she says. I'll check if Frank's around. Before I can object, she's already jogging toward the parked semi. Be careful, I call softly. She waves without looking back. I drum my fingers on the wheel, uneasy. Lily and Riley are quiet behind me. Riley's managed to prop herself up, a pistol in her hand. She meets my gaze in the rearview and gives a terse nod. She's got my back if anything happens. Lily's eyes are huge and worried. She clutches the shotgun in her lap. I know she's terrified to use it, but at least she'll have it if needed. Cass reaches the semi and disappears behind the cab, presumably looking for her friend or any sign of life. A minute passes. 2. Each second amps up my anxiety. I tap my foot, considering going after her. At last, Cass emerges from behind the truck, walking back briskly. I exhale in relief and roll down the window as she approaches. Well, she comes up to my side of the truck. In the dim light, I can see sweat on her brow despite the cooling evening. Frank's not here, she says, a little out of breath. His rig's here, but cab's empty. Maybe he went into town, but he left the cab unlocked. We could hide in the trailer or use the rig to smash through the border fence if we have to. Smash through the fence? That sounds insane, though at this point not off the table. Cass's suggestion hangs in the air. I frown. If he's not here, maybe we should keep moving. I don't like staying exposed this close to the line. We can follow the fence and find another spot to cross. A sudden blinding flood of light washes over us. Several floodlights explode to life atop the office building and along the fence, illuminating the yard like it's midday. I recoil, throwing an arm up over my face. Shit spotlights. Sam, go! Riley yells from the back. I don't even think. I turn the key and the truck engine roars to life. But before I can slam it in reverse, a booming voice echoes from a loudspeaker. This is the FBI. Cut your engine and step out of the vehicle with your hands up. You are surrounded. My stomach plunges. Surrounded? I dart a look around and feel despair crash over me. From behind various stacks of crates and concrete barriers, dark shapes emerge, armored figures in tactical gear. At least a dozen, forming a loose ring. I see rifles glinting in the harsh light. How did they? My eyes fall on Cass still standing right outside my window. She's not raising her hands or running. Instead, she steps back from the truck door, turning to face me through the open window. Her gun is in her hand, but pointed at the ground. And the look on her face, oh no. Oh no. It hits me like a bullet between the ribs. Cass knew. Cass led us here. I stare at her, betrayal and disbelief warring in my chest. Cass, what did you do? My voice trembles. Tears glisten in her eyes as she mouths silently, I'm sorry. Rage and heartbreak flare white hot inside me. Before I can do anything, Lily suddenly screams from the back. No. Cass, no. How could you? Lily lunges as if to get out, but Riley grabs her, holding her down as she sobs in panic. Over the loudspeaker, the FBI voice repeats. All of you in the truck, exit the vehicle now. This is your final warning. I see red. My oldest friend, my sister in arms, betrayed us. Led us right into a trap. Time seems to slow. I flick my eyes to the side mirror. More agents behind us, guns trained. If we try to run or fight, we're likely dead. Is surrender even an option? Shoot on sight, echoed in my memory. But they'd probably rather take us alive now, to parade their victory and conviction. Alive, perhaps, but never free again. And Cass. Cass will walk away. She'll get to go back to her son, make some plea deal. I grit my teeth so hard I think they might crack. Riley's voice is low and cold behind me. What are we doing, Sam? If we're giving up, say the word. Otherwise, I know she'll go down firing if I signal. I meet Cass's eyes through the window. She's crying openly now. Her gun still hangs in her hand, useless. She's not pointing it at us or them. Likely some arrangement that she helps corral us, but doesn't actually shoot. Of course, she couldn't quite stomach that. She betrayed us, but she still cares, at least enough to cry about it. A furious part of me wants to grab my shotgun and blast her where she stands. But outside, I hear the clicks of safeties going off. They won't wait much longer. Think, Sam, think. Is there any way out? Cass steps further back, lifting one hand in the air and calls out. Sam. Please. Don't fight. I made sure they wouldn't hurt you if you surrendered. Please just do it. You'll get a chance, a fair trial. Her voice breaks. A fair trial. Riley roars from her window, raising her pistol at Cass. You fucking traitor. You sold us out. Bang. Riley fires. The shot goes wide. Lily grabbed Riley's arm at the last second, spoiling her aim. The bullet pings off the side of the semi's trailer. Instantly, a deafening volley of gunfire erupts from the perimeter. Bullets rip into the pickup's hood and doors. The windshield spiders with cracks. We all duck instinctively. The air explodes with shouting. Hold your fire, someone yells, but a few more shots ring out before it stops. I lift my head. A hole has punched through the windshield inches from where Cass had been standing. On the ground, I see Cass herself sprawled a few feet from the truck, on her side. My heart lurches. Is she? Cass groans and rolls onto her back, clutching her left shoulder. I see blood pouring between her fingers. The stray bullet hit her. Poetic justice, some dark part of me whispers. But I feel no satisfaction, only a numb horror. Cease fire. Cease fire, the loudspeaker blares. There's a tense lull. Cass, wounded, raises her good hand weakly, trying to signal them. I'm hit, hold fire, she cries out. For a moment, nobody moves. The FBI likely doesn't want to shoot their informant or risk hitting us if we surrender. My mind races. This might be the only sliver of a chance we'll get amid the chaos. I glance back at Riley and Lily. Lily is sobbing, eyes squeezed shut, arms wrapped around Riley. Riley looks at me, teeth bared in pain and fury, her pistol still gripped tight. She has blood on her face, maybe glass cuts or a graze. We have maybe seconds before they either rush us or resume shooting. I swallow. Riley, how many rounds you got? She flicks open her revolver's cylinder one-handed. Miraculously, she has a couple rounds left. Two, she mutters. I nod, then say quietly, we're not dying here. I floor the accelerator. The pickup's tires spin on the gravel for a heartbeat, then catch. The truck leaps forward. I yank the wheel toward the chain-link fence at the border edge of the yard. The only side that looked less covered by agents, since it opens toward the border, and presumably they wouldn't stand in the line of fire there. Go! Go! Riley shouts, catching on. She shoves Lily down on the seat and raises her body just enough to aim out the blown-out back window. She starts firing wildly at the cluster of agents nearest on our left to keep their heads down. An agent stands up in our path, trying to aim at our engine block. Too slow. The truck plows into him. I feel a bump as he's tossed aside. Then comes the screeching tear of metal as we hit the fence at full speed. The chain link gives way in a shower of sparks and torn steel. For a terrifying moment, the truck bogs down, tangled in wire, and then we burst through onto the other side, skidding onto a dusty service road beyond the yard. Gunshots pop behind us. A back window of the truck shatters completely. Lily screams but huddles low. We are past the perimeter, but not safe yet. I keep my foot planted on the gas. The pickup fishtails on the dirt road as we tear away from the freight yard, heading south into the scrubland beyond the border fence. They'll chase us. Lily cries, voice breaking. No doubt. Even if that was a border, it won't stop them now. They'll radio Mexican authorities or hell, come after us themselves. But right now, I'm counting on confusion buying us a minute or two head start. They likely didn't expect us to charge the fence. Headlights flare behind. The semi's floodlights illuminate the dust trail as vehicles turn to pursue. Riley groans, slumping back. Her two shots are spent. She stares back at the yard, eyes wild. Sam, we ain't out of range yet. Step on it. The engine howls as I push it to its limit. We bounce over rutted ground. In the mirror, I see at least one FBI SUV bursting through the mangled fence after us, maybe 200 yards back. A sudden stuttering from the engine makes my blood run cold. No, not now. The truck's taken a lot of bullets. Maybe something critical got hit. The temperature gauge is spiking. Come on, baby, hold together, I whisper, coaxing the machine. We crest a small hill, and a glimmer of salvation appears ahead. The Rio Grande River, winding through the dusk about a half mile further south. The water is low but moving fast. On the far side of that shallow ravine is definitively Mexico. But we're technically already over the border line, I think, though that hardly matters when bullets are flying. The pickup sputters, losing power. We're running out of time and horsepower. I scan and see what looks like a dirt ramp or path leading down toward the riverbed. I yank the wheel toward it, and we jolt down a slope toward the water, crashing through mesquite bushes. The truck protests with grinding noises. Steam starts billowing from under the hood. We reach the rocky bank, and I slam the brakes. Out! Out now! I shout. Riley is half unconscious, her face pale, but Lily is already moving, pulling Riley's good arm over her shoulder. I grab the duffel bag, some insane part of me not willing to leave that last cache of money, and we stagger away from the dying truck. The FBI SUV screeches to a halt on the hill behind us, doors flying open. A spotlight beam stabs down, finding us on the bank. Freeze, a voice commands. Shots crack, puffs of dirt erupt around our feet as we scramble behind the shelter of a large boulder. I return fire with my shotgun almost blindly, one-handed while supporting Riley's other side. The buckshot probably goes wide, but it buys a second. Another bullet ricochets off the boulder with a whine. We reach the water's edge. It's maybe thigh deep at the center of the flow, murky brown. On the opposite side, the ground rises into brush and darkness. No lights over there, no sign of people. If we can cross, perhaps we can disappear into the terrain. But can Riley make it? She's barely conscious, mumbling something. Lily and I exchange a panicked look. I'll help her, you cover. Lily yells, surprising me with her firmness. She hefts Riley with both arms. Adrenaline must be lending her strength. I nod and spin around, pumping and firing my last shotgun shell up the hill. It forces the agents to duck for cover a moment. Then I turn and plunge into the river beside Lily and Riley. The cold water shocks my system, swirling about my waist as I find deeper channel. Lily gasps and stumbles, dropping to her knees as the current tugs at her and Riley. I grab Riley under the armpits, taking her weight. Lily regains balance and together we half carry, half drag Riley through the muddy water. Behind us, more flashlight beams dance on the US side. One finds us and immediately bullets start slapping the water around us, sending sprays into the air. We're sitting ducks out here. I grit my teeth and push forward. Another few yards. Suddenly, a searing punch hits me in the side. I cry out as fiery pain lances up my ribs. I almost lose my grip on Riley, but I grit through it. They shot me. Keep moving. Don't fall. Lily shrieks, Sam. Sam, you're hit. Go. I choke out. The far bank is just steps away now. We lunge and crawl onto the Mexican side, collapsing behind a cluster of rocks and scrub. My head spins. Warm blood trickles down my right side. Maybe it's just a graze. I pray it's just a graze. Everything hurts too much to tell. Riley moans, and I see she's still alive at least, eyes half open. Lily crouches over us both, sobbing and whispering frantic prayers in Spanish. Up on the American side, the FBI agents gather at the riverbank. I see three figures with rifles, but they hesitate. They can't just shoot openly into Mexico. It's a jurisdictional mess. They shout at us to stop, but none attempt to cross immediately. Maybe they expect to coordinate with Mexican authorities now. One agent lifts a megaphone, his voice carries over the water. Give yourselves up. There's nowhere to run. I almost laugh hysterically. Nowhere to run? We ran through half the state and across a damn river. I struggle up onto my knees, chest heaving. My side throbs, but I press a hand there, and it comes away with only a modest smear of blood. Through and through flesh wound, maybe. I'll survive that. The agents start wading into the river now cautiously. Possibly they decided they don't care about lines on a map at this moment. Lily looks at me, eyes full of terror. She's drenched, shivering, and still has her helmet on her head somehow. Sam, she whimpers. I cough, tasting copper. Out of ammo, out of strength. This is the end of the line. But damned if I'll let them take us easily. I pat the duffel bag, still miraculously strapped to me. In a last desperate thought, I dig into it. Maybe something useful. A flare, anything? My fingers brush something solid and familiar. A grenade? No, we have no explosives. But I do feel a small heavy object and realize it's the spare revolver from our safe house stash, the one Cass had stowed. I'd forgotten it in the chaos. With shaking hands, I pull it out. It's wet but likely functional. I flip the cylinder, four rounds loaded. It won't win a fight against an army, but it might buy us a quick end on our terms. The first FBI man is halfway across, fighting the current. Two others follow behind, guns high. Riley suddenly grips my arm, startling me. She's awake, her face ghostly pale. She glances at Lily, then at me. In her eyes, I see what she means to do. I shake my head violently, whispering, No! Riley, no! She musters a crooked grin, blood staining her teeth. This is where I shine, boss. Before I can stop her, Riley snatches the revolver from my hand. Riley! I rasp. She uses the boulder to pull herself upright, swaying. She looks at Lily and me, eyes softening. Get the hell out of here. Find a life. This is the only way. Lily begins to sob, clinging to Riley's leg. Please don't. Riley places her hand on Lily's head gently. Take care of each other. You're free now, kid. Then with a feral yell, Riley steps out from behind cover, firing the revolver at the agents still in the water. Bang! Bang! Two shots. She's armed, one of them shouts. A storm of gunfire answers. Riley is struck once, twice. I see her body jerk, but she stays on her feet, laughing crazily as she empties the last shots. Is that all you got? She screams defiantly across the water, arms outstretched. Another crack, and Riley's chest blossoms red. Her smile fades and she crumples to the rocky ground, the revolver clattering from her hand. No! Lily wails, about to rush to Riley. I grab Lily, pulling her back into the shadows of the scrub further up the slope. She fights me at first, sobbing hysterically, but I hold her tight. Above us on the American side, I hear the lead agent yelling, Cease fire! Hold fire! They realize Riley's down. An eerie silence follows, just the river gurgling and Lily's muffled sobs against my shoulder. I peer out carefully. Riley's fallen form lies still by the boulder. No movement. The agents stand in the river, uncertain. One approaches her cautiously from behind, rifle trained. He nudges her with a foot and then signals to his colleagues. They start moving again toward her, and presumably toward us beyond. But Riley bought us crucial seconds. In that time, I dragged Lily further into the brush, up the slope. The light is dim and the terrain unfamiliar, but adrenaline propels me. Lily keeps looking back, crying for Riley. I know leaving her body behind is tearing Lily apart. It's tearing me apart too. I want to scream, but I choke it down. She had to. I whisper fiercely to Lily as I haul her along. She wanted to save us. Don't make it for nothing. My own tears mix with the rain on my face. Behind us across the river, I hear muffled shouts. Probably discovering we are no longer near Riley's body. They went that way. Someone calls faintly. Lights beam across the water, slicing through brush but not finding us yet. We crawl on hands and knees up a ravine, each movement agony for me, but I push through. Eventually, we huddle under a tangle of mesquite at the top of a ridge. We have no more strength to run. I press Lily against me, both of us shaking, trying to quiet our breaths. Over the next half hour, we see and hear distant commotion. The FBI on the far bank and likely local police or guardia mobilizing on this side. Flashlights bob and sweep lower down near the river, voices calling in Spanish and English. They search, but they didn't see where we went in the dark. If we stay low and quiet, they might pass us by. I feel lightheaded from blood loss and exhaustion. My side is still oozing, and I tear a strip from my shirt to staunch it. Lily eventually calms to quiet whimpers against my chest. In the darkness, I can barely make out her face, but I know she's in shock and devastated about Riley. Hell, I am too. But I can't afford to break down yet. At some point, maybe an hour later, the search moves further east, the voices and lights drifting away. They haven't found us. Not yet. I gently pat Lily. We need to move just a bit more. Get further from here. My voice is a dry croak. She sniffles and nods feebly. We're both at the edge of collapse, but we manage to stand and stumble onward into the night, leaving the river and all the carnage behind. Each step is a battle. I feel feverish, my side throbbing. Lily is barefoot, having lost her boots in the water, and she limps on cut feet. But we keep each other upright, driven by sheer will. Finally, when the sounds of pursuit have long faded and an eerie silence envelopes the desert, we find a small depression under a rocky outcrop. I decide it's as good a place as any to stop before one of us literally drops. We huddle together under the meager shelter of a boulder, sharing body heat. The night is surprisingly cold now that the rain is gone. Lily's quiet now, shock or exhaustion rendering her mute. I drape the damp quilt, which somehow clung in the duffel, around both of us. Rest, I whisper. I'll watch. Though in truth, I doubt I can stay awake much longer myself. But Lily, poor Lily, needs sleep or she'll crack. She nods and curls against me. Within minutes, her breathing steadies into sleep. I fight to keep my eyes open, gun clutched in my hand with no bullets, scanning the darkness for any sign of approach. But there's only emptiness and stars above, endless stars. My mind drifts as fatigue overtakes me. I see Riley's grinning face in my memory, hear Cass's laugh from better times. Cass, is she alive now? Wounded, likely taken into custody by her new friends. I feel a pang of sorrow and anger. Why, Cass? Why did you do it? I know the reasons, her boy, perhaps promises of leniency. I can even sympathize on some level. But it still hurts like a knife in my heart. I clench my jaw. If she survives, she'll face the consequences of her choices. Perhaps she'll rot in prison or witness protection, living with betrayal on her conscience. Perhaps that's punishment enough. As for me and Lily, if we live through this night, what then? We're alone in a foreign land with nothing but a bag of money and the clothes on our backs. But we are free. For now, at least. I tilt my head back, looking at those stars. Somewhere up there, maybe Riley is laughing, saying she told them off good. And somewhere maybe the spirit of what we fought for still burns. I wrap an arm around Lily and finally allow my eyes to close, whispering a hoarse promise into the dark. We made it, we're free. Your sacrifice won't be for nothing. And then mercifully, I surrender to a dreamless sleep. Chapter 5. 2 weeks later, I sit at a rickety wooden table outside a roadside cantina in northern Mexico, watching a dusty sunset paint the horizon orange. My wounds are healing, though every movement still pulls at the stitches in my side. Lily is inside the cantina, fetching us something cold to drink. For the first time in a long while, I feel almost human. We're alive. The thought still feels foreign and fragile. Every morning I wake half expecting to hear sirens or to find myself back in that farmhouse, adrenaline pounding. But instead I wake to quiet, to a hazy sky and the distant sound of goats on the hills. We found a small village here where folks ask few questions. A kind old herbalist gave me herbs and even sewed up my side by oil lamp in exchange for some American dollars and my red motorcycle jacket. I figured I won't need that symbol anymore. She called us Angels Caídos, fallen angels, after hearing a sliver of our story. I almost laughed at the irony. I absently turned the folded newspaper on the table with my fingertips. It's yesterday's paper from Texas, which I paid a trucker a hefty sum to procure for me on his cross-border run. My eyes drift to the headline yet again. Biker gang terror spree ends in bloodshed, and the subheadline: all four Iron Angels neutralized in firefight, FBI says. Neutralized. Such a clinical word for the death and destruction that went down. The article is a mixture of truth and lies. It describes a dramatic standoff at the border, how two of the suspects, unnamed but clearly Riley and Cass, were killed at the scene. It claims the other two fled into the river and are presumed dead, as extensive searches yielded no bodies. It even speculates they were likely swept downstream or eaten by wildlife in the desert. I huff at that. Presumed dead. I suppose I should be grateful. It means they're not actively hunting us. Officially, the case is closed. The FBI chalked it up as a complete victory. Terrorists eliminated. There's no mention of Cass's betrayal or her role as an informant. Publicly, she's painted as just another member of our gang who died. Perhaps that was part of the deal she made. No one will ever know she flipped. Dying anonymously as one of us might not be what she imagined, but that's how history will remember Cassandra Ortiz. I feel a flicker of sorrow for her. We had years of sisterhood before this, and despite my anger, I missed the friend I thought I had. But in the end, she made her choice and paid for it. Poetic justice, maybe. Riley's name isn't mentioned either. None of our real names are. But I don't need a name to know the description of a female suspect who opened fire on agents, causing fatal return fire, is talking about her. I bite the inside of my cheek, holding back a wave of grief. I hope they at least brought her body back and gave her a damned dignified burial. She earned that much. My fierce, reckless Riley. She went out the way she would have wanted, fighting and unbroken. I promise myself I'll find a way to honor her memory properly, once it's safe. Sam. I look up to see Lily standing beside me with two bottles of cola in her hands. She offers me one. Her free arm is in a sling, her shoulder got wrenched badly that night, but otherwise she's mending. Her eyes search mine as they often do now, as if making sure I'm really still here. I take the bottle and manage a small smile. Gracias, I murmur. She slides into the chair across from me. The late sun casts a soft glow on her face. She's cut her hair short to avoid recognition. The boyish cut oddly suits her, highlighting her delicate features and strong eyes. Eyes that have seen far too much pain, yet still shine with gentle hope. I push the newspaper toward her. It came out, I say. Lily scans the headline. Her Spanish is better than mine, so she reads through quickly, lips thinning at the details. When she finishes, she sets the paper aside with a shaky breath. So, it's over then? For everyone else, I mean. Seems so, I reply. I pick at the peeling label on my soda bottle. To the world, we're gone. Dead. I can't help a bitter chuckle. In a way, maybe we did die out there who we were. Lily reaches across the table and lays her hand over mine. No, we're still us, Sam. Maybe. Maybe a new us, but we're alive. Her voice is soft but firm. I turn my hand to squeeze hers. The sunset reflects in her eyes, turning them gold. Alive, I echo. The word tastes like both a blessing and a curse. We fall quiet, sipping our colas. A few locals sit at another table, laughing over a joke. The normalcy of it is startling. How can the world still be turning like nothing happened? That people can laugh, not knowing or caring who we are or what we've lost. After a long moment, Lily speaks up again. What will we do now? It's the question we've avoided, content just to survive day by day. I gaze out at the horizon, considering. The money from the duffel is safely hidden back in our tiny rented room. Enough to keep us afloat for a good while. We could slip further south, start fresh under new names. In a strange way, that almost feels like betraying everything we fought for, to just fade into obscurity and try to be happy. But maybe that's what Riley wanted for us. A chance at the normal life none of us had. We lay low. We build something new. I say slowly. Maybe find honest work in some town where no one knows us. There's a lot of Mexico left to explore. I force a faint smile. Lily nods thoughtfully, though I sense hesitation. She's quiet a moment, picking at the sling on her arm. Do you ever think about continuing? Not the robberies or violence, she adds quickly, glancing to ensure no one nearby hears. I mean the cause. Helping girls like me, like Vanessa. even from here. Her cheeks flush as if she's said something forbidden. But I don't find it absurd. Actually, I've thought about it too in the late hours of the night, when pain kept me awake. Wondering if all we'd done will just evaporate, or if we could still make some difference from the shadows. Yes, I admit quietly. I do think about it. I take a deep breath. We can't do it the old way. We can't draw attention. But we have some money and my brain, your heart. I manage a tiny grin. Maybe we can do something small, under the radar. Donating anonymously to clinics across the border, or funding bus tickets for girls to get to cities where it's legal. Things like that. Lily's face brightens just a fraction. We could make that our new mission. In secret. In secret, I agree. Our days of bold gestures and blazing guns are done. But the ideals, those don't die with the gang. A light breeze rustles the newspaper. My eyes drift to another part of the page. A short piece about a new restrictive law in some state. Different battlefield, same war. It makes my blood stir, but then I exhale, letting the anger pass. One fight at a time. We'll do what we can quietly. I lift my bottle. To new beginnings, I toast softly. Lily lifts hers and touches it to mine with a clink. To the fallen, she adds, her voice catching. My throat tightens. To Riley, I whisper. And in Cass. It's still hard to say her name, but I say it. Lily nods, eyes moist. May they rest in peace. We drink to them, to everything they were, the good and the bad. As the sun dips below the horizon, I fold the newspaper neatly and then tear it into quarters. It's time to let that chapter go. Piece by piece, I drop the scraps into the ashtray on the table and light a match. The paper catches fire, flaring bright for an instant before burning down to black flakes. In that brief glow, I see my own name in print for the last time, curling into ash. Samantha Burns, dead at 29. A notorious outlaw to the end, if the papers are believed. The ashes flutter away on the breeze. I reach over and squeeze Lily's hand again. We should get moving, I say. Catch that evening bus. We decided to head further south tonight, closer to the anonymity of a big city. She stands and helps me to my feet. My side protests, but it's much better than before. We gather our meager belongings, a small knapsack with a change of clothes, our remaining cash carefully divided and hidden on us. The rest of the money we've stashed in a safe spot. We'll retrieve it once we're settled somewhere. We start walking down the dirt road toward the bus stop. The twilight sky is purple and deepening to navy, a few stars blinking alive. I find myself glancing over my shoulder out of habit, but there's no one following. There are no headlights, no helicopters. Just the chirp of crickets and the crunch of our footsteps. Lily slips her hand into mine as we walk. I glance at her in surprise. She offers me a timid smile. Thank you, she says softly. For what? I murmur. For keeping me alive. For not giving up on me. On any of us, even when things were darkest. I feel a sting behind my eyes and look away to the silhouette of mountains in the distance. I almost did. If it weren't for you and Riley, I might have given up back at that river. My voice is raw with emotion. Lily stops walking and gently tugs me to stop too. But you didn't. You're the strongest person I've ever known, Sam. We only survived because of you. I open my mouth to refute that. I want to credit Riley's sacrifice, Lily's courage. But Lily steps forward and wraps her arms around me in a careful hug, mindful of my healing wounds. I stiffen in surprise, then melt into it, resting my chin atop her head. For a long moment, we just hold each other there under the emerging stars, two survivors clinging to the only family we have left. In that embrace, the weight of everything finally starts to lift. Not entirely. There are wounds inside us that will take years to heal, if ever. But I feel the tight knot in my chest loosen a bit, replaced by a warmth I'd thought I might never feel again. Hope. We break apart gently and continue down the road, hand in hand. In the east, the moon is rising silver and new. We have a bus to catch, a new life to forge somewhere down that dark highway. The future is uncertain, but at least it's ours, a freedom paid for dearly, but a freedom nonetheless. As we reach the main road, I take one last look at the far-off northern horizon. Goodbye, I think, to the country that branded me a terrorist, to the ghosts of a life that's gone. I silently say goodbye to Riley, imagining her riding an endless highway in the sky, wild and free. And I say goodbye to Cass, hoping that in her final moments she understood why we did what we did, and that we forgave each other. Lily squeezes my hand, drawing my gaze back to the present. Our eyes meet, and we share a determined nod. We turn our backs on the past and step forward toward whatever awaits. Two iron angels, a little battered, a little broken, but unbowed, fading into the night to find our own piece of peace. End.